We have our style to our ideas. So there's already outlines provided.
There's outlines provided in the I know it's the Andy Stanley version of me, we, God, you, we.
Glad to have Andy in our BTC.
Awana also has partnered up and have created Children's Ministry.
Nice.
Answer your Children's Ministry, if you so choose, can do this along with preaching on Sunday. And we're just really excited about this. We feel like it's going to be a historic moment for Chicago, and we're excited to be a part of it. On the calendar, just one other thing I want to mention before we move into a really important teaching is that we have a couple of pastoral retreats coming up. You should have them on your calendar. You should know when they are. Everybody know when the pastoral couples retreat starts? August?
July 30th.
July 31st to August 3rd. And that's the couples retreat. And then the next retreat is our pastoral planning retreat that we usually have in November that we've shifted up a little bit to take advantage of the New Life cities. You see the map there and the cities around the world are traveling in October, I believe 26th and 27th. And so we said, hey, why don't we make our annual pastoral planning retreat and key elders retreat with our global leaders. So, and let's do it on a Friday, Saturday instead of a Monday, Tuesday, so we can get all of our bivocational. We've got over 10 bivocational pastors, many of them not able to be here right now because they're working other jobs at the moment. So they'll be able to participate in that. And then that Monday is an all-church staff meeting. So it's a real big weekend. Excited to be teaming up with citywide and international leaders. So mark your notes. Take a look. I mean, how can people see this calendar at any time of any day?
Go to newlifeadmin.org, click on the calendar link from the main menu.
Boom, it's always there for you. You never have to wonder. It's updated. It's going to be the most current version of what's going on. There it is.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you, Joshua.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Is there anything specific happening in terms of branding and marketing for cities that are outside of Chicago?
That's a good question. Specifically for other cities, it's just going to be the, as far as we know, it's the general Explore Guide. So, which, you know, has all the resources. Our website, exploreguidechicago.com,
points to the
bigger resources on Explore Guides. But we'll work, we're going to work with Kent, and you guys will see that information and that kind of stuff. But yeah, I think currently there's a couple other cities doing it right now.
Yeah, Faith Church and Dyers on board with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bob Bauer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're part of Chicago, but there's some stuff going on, I think, in North Carolina.
Yeah, same time.
Phoenix, I think Phoenix is also doing it as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was that your question?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Great. Thank you, man. Appreciate it. God bless.
Guys.
Hey, why don't we stand for a second? Just make sure your blood is flowing. Make sure your mind is alert. So I'm going to ask you to put away all electronics as we get into. You could take notes if you want on paper. But no cell phones, anything else like that to distract you. We're called to lead. Tell the person beside you, you're called to be a leader. And before we sit down, let me ask this. What do you think is the hardest part about leading a team? You've been leading teams for a while. You as a leader are one of the hardest parts. Yeah, all right. Yeah, leading yourself.
I thought you were accusing him.
No. What else?
Reproducing culture and vision
in the team. Big challenge.
Staying motivated.
That's a huge challenge.
Alignment.
Making sure everybody's on the same page.
Raising up other leaders,
not just the ones that you have. What else?
Remembering why you do what you do.
Remembering the why behind all this work. Why is it that we're doing what we're doing? Very good. All right, take a seat.
Amen.
This is going to be a short, quick teaching time, but I believe a very important one. I believe the major difference between what I would call a family church and a congregational church is the ability of the pastor to build a team. A family church, and I'm not talking about culture here, I'm talking about size. A family church basically revolves around Papa. Papa's able to meet with people, counsel people, lead people. They are the engine behind things. They drive things. Very little happens without Papa. It's like an extended family where there's a patriarch that makes things happen, helps things happen, organizes things happen. When he's out of town or on vacation, it kind of stalls out a little bit because everybody's waiting for Papa, because it's a church that's organized like a family, basically. And to be honest with you, the great majority of churches in America are that way. The great majority of churches in America, I think it's 80% or so, are under 100 people. By the way, there's nothing more sacred about a church of 30 or a church of 4,000. The question is not about size. The question is about, are we making disciples? And so that's the question. Are we baptizing people, making disciples, spreading the mission, reproducing? But oftentimes we sort of plateau at a place, not because of preaching ability, not because of faith, not because of the building necessarily, not because of parking necessarily. We plateau oftentimes because of our ability to build and sustain a healthy team. And if I were to coach pastors on breaking through some of those ceilings, organizational ceilings, one of the first places I would spend some time is on the area of two areas I would spend a lot of time on. Number one, are you outreach focused, not just ministering to people that are inside, but do you know how to get out there into the community? Are you outreach focused, getting outside of the walls of the church, actually spreading the gospel, being able to penetrate the community? How do you do that? How do you spend your time on that? But the number two, where I'd spend a huge amount of time on, is this: how do you build and sustain a healthy team? John Maxwell says that the best predictor of how you do is the people that are around you. That look at the people that are around you, and that's a predictor of how you will do. Now, as a leader, you bring people around you, you raise people around you, you attract people around you, you keep people around you. And so it's part of your responsibility to determine who is going to be a part of this team. What kind of people am I looking for? And I realize that we're all over the map when it comes to sizes here. And so some of you have staff, part-time staff that maybe you meet with. How many of you meet with your staff weekly? You meet with at least, okay, a lot of you. How many of you meet with volunteer staff, in other words, unpaid staff, weekly, bi-weekly? You have a team like that? Yeah, okay. So I'm kind of speaking with that in mind. When I first started at New Life, I was the only paid staff, and I was paid a part-time salary. And so all of my team that I had was, they were all volunteer leaders. And so no one gained a salary, got a salary. But I believe that people that are motivated can function like a staff person, basically, and carry a lot of load, but they're volunteer. They have other jobs that they're going to pay their bills, but they can carry a load that way. So I'm not particularly talking about an eldership team here. We've talked a lot about how to raise elders, qualification of elders, leading elders, and that fits into this team building topic, but I'm primarily talking about a functioning team, volunteer staff, the team that kind of keeps the operation going of what you're doing as a church. For example, you may have a children's director that really carries a big load at the church, but she's not an elder. You may have a office administrator that carries a lot of load in moving things forward, but they're not a part of the elder team. And so I'm talking about people that really keep the church flowing, moving, not necessarily the elder team. Now, I have to admit that when I first started at New Life, I gathered together every week with we would gather together with a team about five or six men that we called the leadership team. We didn't call it the elder team necessarily, but the leadership team. And in essence, they functioned as my staff. They did elder responsibilities like shepherding, caring for people. But I look back and I think they did a lot more than just the spiritual responsibilities. Some of them were in charge of vans and vehicles and building things and finances. And so sometimes, how many of you operate a little bit like that? You have an elder team that does a lot of the mechanics of how things operate as well. Okay, so this is going to be about a team, not necessarily an elder team. Are you with me on that? Okay, so I'm going to give you really quickly what I believe are 10 key principles for building an effective team. Unless you build a team, you are the bottleneck. Unless you build a team, you are the bottleneck. Some of you right now, the biggest challenge at your location is you. Not because you're not gifted, not because you don't work hard. You could be working really, really hard. You could be burning the candle at both ends, but you could be the greatest bottleneck to your congregation. Not because you don't have a good work ethic. Some of you are getting up early in the morning and praying and working long hours into the night. And your wife may be saying, hey, you know, why are you working so long hours? And you say, well, I'm doing everything that I can. I'm working really hard. But you can only do so much as one person. But if you understand the power of multiplying yourself, you effectively quadruple or rapidly reproduce the repercussions of what you could do by building a team. Most of us don't build a team because we operate in the urgent. We feel like I don't have time to build a team. It takes too much work to build a team. But what we don't understand, unless the team is built, eventually we will hit a plateau that we cannot overcome without building a successful team. We get caught in the urgent. Who has time to build a team? I barely have time to get done what I'm doing right now. Without understanding, unless you build a team, you're going to have less and less time as times go forward. You're going to have a wide open back door. You're going to end up doing a lot of things that you should not be doing and not moving forward at the pace that you should be moving forward. So let me give you the 10 key principles rapidly. Number one. Seek God and keep your own fire. The first principle is that you need to be seeking God. No one can seek God for you. You cannot delegate seeking God. I have the intercessor seek God. I don't have time to seek God. No, you can't delegate that. You have to be seeking the face of God, and you have to be fired up about what God has called you to do and fired up about God. One of your primary responsibilities is keep yourself in line with God and your fire on your heart on fire about the things that God has called you to do. That seems easy, but that's a huge challenge because all of us waver in our fervency. One of my greatest challenges over the years has been to keep my heart on fire for God and impassioned about the vision. And I've talked to you before about how I do it. Everybody has to find their own rhythm, their own pattern. But listen, if you lose fire, you can't lead a team that's on fire and passionate if the leader's not on fire and passionate. You can't lead a team that's spiritual unless the leader is spiritual. You can't expect that people will give up and sacrifice if they don't feel the passion and the vision and commitment coming from you. And so one of your challenges is to keep your heart on fire. Number two, you need to clarify and localize the vision. Clarify and localize the vision. You're a part of a bigger vision that we have sought God together for the city of Chicago, for other nations around the world. But, you know, sometimes it's easy to get lost in a big vision. I drive down some neighborhoods in Chicago where there's a lot of storefront churches, and it always kind of amuses me a little bit how many little storefront churches are called international or worldwide. You know, I will drop by the building and think, you know, I think maybe 15 people can fit in that place, and yet you're called the worldwide international Church of God in the Spirit, Holy Ghost on fire, reaching the nations for Jesus. That's the name of the title. And I'm thinking, you know what? That's a grandiose vision, but sometimes we can get lost in the bigger vision without asking ourselves the contextual vision. So we're a part of a bigger vision at the church, and you need to take that bigger vision at the church and say, now, my location, my community, my place, how are we carrying this vision forward together? That's not just New Life, by the way. We are all part of a bigger vision that Jesus gave us, to make disciples of all nations. And until that's accomplished, we are not done. Jesus gave us the mandate 2,000 years ago, and it's still not accomplished and still not done. We are to make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And our desire is to bring the glory of God to earth so that by making disciples, so that people are transformed and glorifying God. That's the bigger vision. Every church and denomination and every generation has to figure out what they have to do in their generation. Every church has a particular vision, not a new mission, but a particular vision for their state, their time, their generation. And every congregation and people within that have to say, what part do I play in this? So it's our job, for example, at Logan Square to say, yeah, we know we're trying to reach 1% of the city of Chicago. Yeah, and multiply. But at Logan Square, what does that mean? Because if you just say, yeah, we want to reach 1% of Chicago, yay, 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 and plant churches around the world, yay, yay, yay. But what does that mean to Logan Square? You have to clarify and contextualize it. And that's not up to a committee. That's a team working together, but there has to be a leader that discerns, that clarifies that. Number three, you need to recruit team members into clarity. If you're going to be building a staff team, a volunteer team, a team that functions and helps move different areas forward, you need to recruit. Who do you need on your team? And you need to recruit them into clarity. And what role do they play on the team that you're recruiting them into? I think some of us bring people on the team, but we don't explain clearly what it means to be a part of the team. And some people join the team and don't know what their role is on the team. You say, yeah, yeah, hey, it'd be great to have you on the team. All right, I'm on the team now. They don't know what their job is. They don't know what their role is. They don't know exactly why they're a part of the team. And so if they don't know their responsibility, then no one will be accountable for anything because we're all just kind of on the team together. But in essence, what happens is you become responsible for everything and people give you suggestions on how you could do it. So you just found a bunch of people to delegate more things on your plate unless you clarify roles. Does that make sense? So recruit people into clarity. In order to recruit people into clarity, you have to ask yourself this question. What kind of person do we need on this team? If you're a high visionary person, big picture person, you need to recruit an administrator on your team. You need to recruit detail people on your team. If you are a detail person, you need to recruit motivators on your team. What are the key ministries that happen in the church? If you have a weekly meeting, for example, with volunteers like at Midway, we meet every week and we have a mixture of staff and volunteer people that come to the staff, that come to the Midway meeting specifically focused on Midway operation. This is not an elder team meeting. This is not a pastoral meeting. This is a staff and volunteer meeting, but each of these people oversee a particular area of ministry, and have clarity as to what their job description is and what they're supposed to accomplish. Does that make sense? So, which leads me to number four. Learn the gifting and personalities of each team member. If you're going to recruit to clarity, you need to ask yourself, what is the gifting of this person and what is the personality of this person? For example, Tony Wasso. I learned very early in life that Tony Wasso, meeting with him and talking with him when I first met Tony, he was working at a printer on an assembly line. But he wasn't an engineer. He wasn't mechanically driven, didn't know how to fix cars. But what he really had, he had a heart of a shepherd. And all throughout Tony's ministry, he's gravitated towards counseling, shepherding, speaking into people's lives. And so after a few changes and shifts around, Tony, he's a part of that team, and Tony's focus is just meeting and counseling people. And Tony, you meet with about, 30 people every week? 30 different people every week, and does pastoral counseling and then helps at the altar counseling people. Tony gets charged up by that. You got a problem? Big problem? Oh man, come here. Let me fix that problem. That would absolutely drain me if I were to meet with people and counseling all the time, because I can do counseling, but that's not my primary gifting. Tony is good at it, charged up about it. He thrives in it. Now, if I were to take Tony and say, Tony, I need an administrator on my team. I need someone to manage the finances and to look over numbers all day. And I were to recruit Tony out of need and put him into a numbers deal, Tony would dry up. He would lose his joy. He would want to quit, because Tony is not wired for numbers. He's wired for people. And I need to understand Tony's wired for count. I need to understand his personality. This is how Tony functions. And I need to understand his gifting. I could walk you around the table of our staff meeting and tell you everybody's gifting and their personality. By personality, I mean, what is driving that person? How is that person? Is that person really motivated by something that they do? So you're building a team, not of people that just like you. Some of us want to just gather a bunch of people that are loyal to us and like us. And so we gather an inept group of people around us just because they're the people that like us. But maybe they're not the right people on the team. Or some of us gather people that are just like us. And if you're real high visionary, you know, go get them, super celebratory, you want other people that are charged up like you. And you know what? You guys get together, you're charged up, you're high, you're celebratory, and then you walk away and no one's taken notes, no one's gotten deadlines. You're all pumped up, but no one knows what to do. Yeah, we're going to change the world. Well, how are you going to start? I don't know, but we're going to do it. And no one has written anything down, no one scheduled anything, so you're just all pumped up. Or if you're all super administrative, you got a lot of details and you got a lot of systems and a lot of methods, but there's no fire in the engine to take people down those methods. No one's motivated to do it because you have got a great plan, but you have no clear motivation. So, number five, define the essential role of each person on the team. Define the essential role of each person on the team. I've gone through this exercise with all of our central service staff. I've gone through this exercise with all of our staff that meets at Midway. Each of them once a month pull out their sheet, and I say, tell me your essential role. And they'll describe, this is my essential role. And under the essential role, they'll have their three top goals that they're trying to achieve. What is an essential role? It's not your job description. When you ask someone, well, what do? A lot of people list tasks. I do this, this, that. That's not an essential role. That's a task list. Your essential role should define the essential purpose of the role that you have on that team. It should define the essential purpose of the role that you have on that team. For example, our worship leader. Their essential role is something like to foster a culture of worship in which people experience God on a regular basis when we come together. That's the essential role. They don't say to lead practices, to tune the guitar, to make sure the sound is in place, No, what is your essential role? Because if you define yourself by your task, you may continue to do tasks that are obsolete because you have a task. If you keep looking at your essential role, you have to ask yourself this question. Am I fulfilling my essential role? I have our building guy write down his essential role. And his essential role is something like, when people walk into this place, we want it to reflect excellence and reflect the nature of God, a warm atmosphere, well-kept, pointing to God as in excellence. It's something like that, not to make sure the temperature's on, to make sure the floors are clean. It's the bigger purpose of your role on this team. And if you want samples of that, I can send you all of the essential roles that we've worked through. Now, it takes time to work through an essential role. You have to think through it. I have defined my essential role. Everyone on the team has defined their essential role. And I would think you need to have a team, and everybody on your team should be able to say, this is my essential role. Any questions about that? Number six, operate on a three-goal, three-month principle. Three-month principle. It's not enough just to define our essential role, but then the question under essential role is, what am I going to do to reach that essential role? So the way that we operate here, the way that I run the staff meeting here, by the way, like I said, we have some people that are volunteer. Like we have Desiree, who is she's the service coordinator. Desiree has a job that gives her flexibility. She's not paid anything, but she comes to the staff meeting, takes notes, and she is the service coordinator, and she helps run the service on Sunday morning, and her job on Sunday morning, her essential role, is something to the effect of making all the teams operate in unity and flow together so that there's no distraction and it gives glory to God. But she comes. She understands that. She's got three goals that she works in as well. Those are clear goals. And so every month, at the beginning of 3 month period of time, we ask everybody to pull out their essential role and we say, what are the three top goals? Don't give me five. Don't give me 10. What happens if people have 10 goals? It's unattainable. Too much to focus on. What happens when we give people yearly goals? What happens at the first part of the year? Not thinking about what happens in December. Oh, I got these goals I have to accomplish. It's too long. Most of us don't check them. We feel like we have 3 months. 3 months is a great time to be able to accomplish quite a bit. And you have to define what in the next 3 months, if I were to be able to accomplish these three top goals, what are my three top priorities for these next 3 months? I have everybody on our staff write down their three top goals for the next 3 months. Our entire team reads it to each other. My three top goals are, what are your three top goals? Your three top goals. We put all the essential goals on the board. Once a month, we check them. How are you progressing on these three goals? How are you progressing on these three goals? At the end of those 3 months, we review them. How did you do on those three goals? And we celebrate when people achieve those three goals. And if people are stuck in those goals, why are you stuck in those goals? Can we talk about it? This was an important goal. Is there a reason you're stuck in this goal? And let's talk about that. What it does is it keeps everybody challenged. It keeps everybody focused. How many of you go to meetings and you talk, you discuss, you talk about Aunt Gertrude's problems and how difficult it is, and then you walk away from the meeting, but you have no action steps. And your team has no action steps. If you're leading a meeting and the people that you're meeting with walk away from that meeting and have no action steps, guess what? They're an advisory board, not a team. I think some of us pastors, because we're not good at delegating action steps, we go to a meeting and people say, "Pastor, I think we need to fix the windows in the sanctuary because they don't look good. And, you know, could we get a sound person that works on this?" And you write notes and then you walk away and you have a list of things to do, and people walk away and say, "I said my piece. I hope the pastor fixes it." And what you've just done is you've just created an advisory board. You haven't built a team. And then next month when you get together, they're going to say, "Chad, why didn't you fix the windows? You know, did you get estimates on it?" "Oh, yeah, I need to get that." "And did you talk to the worship leader? And how come you're not doing that?" And, you know, I don't know about you, but I don't need more of an advisory board. I need a team to carry the workload with me and people to take responsibility for areas. And it's up to me to make sure that we define the team as a working team that flows forward. Number 7. By the way, can I encourage you in 2 good books? One is, you don't have to read these books, read a summary of it. But there is a book called, it's called The 12-Week Year, which is good. It really kind of breaks this down, how to follow this principle, the 3 goals in 3-month principle. And if you're trying to figure out a way of really trying to get down to your essential roles in your life, I would highly encourage a book called Essentialism, because I think it helps you ask questions about yourself, how God has wired you, and what are some... Both of these are non-Christian books, but they're more leadership and management books. Number 7, celebrate weekly progress and coach through challenges. So if your team gets together weekly, I think you need to celebrate weekly. If you get together to evaluate how the ministry is going, and I realize that... probably not everybody does a weekly gathering. If you meet weekly with your staff or volunteer staff, then I would encourage you to always start by celebrating what went well. How many of you know the first thing you want to talk about is what went wrong on Sunday? How come the volume wasn't up? The usher wasn't in place? How come this happened? That small group leader didn't show up? And if you're not careful, Your team leader time can turn into a complaining session. Has it ever felt like that? Everybody complains, what are we going to do about it? You need to start by celebrating the good that God is doing, what's happening, celebrating everything, especially as it reflects people. Start with celebrating good. I start every staff meeting by saying, what are we celebrating today? And so we talk about changed lives, people that have come to Christ, people that got baptized, new person that came. The worship team, wasn't that awesome? The experience, the ushers that were in place, how we saw people ministering to people. We celebrate the good first, and then we go to, and what can we improve for next time? Set the tone as something positive and encouraging, because a lot of people have put work into that. Number 8, deal with relational problems transparently and quickly. Quickly. One of your greatest challenges in your team is going to be relational issues. You got that manager, they're really good at managing, but they offend everybody. Anybody know who I'm talking about? Everybody has one of those. They're really good at tasks, but every week you get complaint. "Hey, they just bossed me around. They just chewed me out." You like them because they get things done, but they just... So deal with those things quickly. I believe that most pastors, because they're shepherds at heart, avoid confrontation. I've been tempted to write a book. Josh said I should write a book that's entitled "Stop Giving Away Your Influence." I believe that a lot of times pastors, because we avoid confrontation, we give away influence. If you're not willing to have people uncomfortable and confront sometimes, then what happens is you tolerate things way too long, you scurry around things, or the other things that oftentimes do, you delegate anything that has to do with any confrontation to someone else. I have people delegate confrontation up the chain all the time, and they delegate it up to me like, "Hey, you know, you should talk to that person." And can I tell you, every time that you delegate away confrontation, every time that you delegate it up or you delegate it over, what you are basically saying is, I'm really not the leader. That person is the leader, or that person is the leader, because I'm not real. I don't really want to deal with the difficult things. And so you delegate away your authority. Good leaders look at confrontation and they say, in a loving way, I'm going to tell the truth. And I know it's going to be hard and offensive, but I'm going to tell the truth. Even as pastors, a pastoral team, can I tell you this? There are sometimes there's things that should be done at location level, but you sort of delegate it up, and sometimes you delegate it up to BTC coach. Sometimes it comes and falls on my lap when a location pastor should be dealing with it, and it comes, Pastor Mark, I think you should deal with this, and so it lands on my lap, and I deal with it, but in essence what you're telling the person in the congregation is, hey, it's really not me, it's that person. I'm just sort of a conduit, and you've really, what you've just told that person is, I'm really not the leader, it's that person that's the leader. That's exactly what you've told them. Like, I because you're avoiding confrontation, you're probably telling the same thing that I've told them, but yet you don't want to be the bad guy, so you delegate it over, you delegate it up, you delegate it out. And I think that as leaders, we have to have a degree of comfort with some confrontation. Now, if you like confrontation too much, we got a therapy group for you. But there has to be a degree of there has to be a degree of comfort with some confrontation. Number 9. Invest in growth opportunities for each team member. If people are a part of your team, you should give them opportunities to grow in their responsibility. That could be a book that you give them. Like, man, you're really good at this. I recently suggested a book to one of our staff members. That I heard was a really good book. I hadn't read it, but it was in their field, and they started reading it, and I already saw improvement in how they operate because they read that book. Send someone to a conference. Have them talk to someone at another church that you think is doing an excellent job in the area that they are positioned in. Typically, your staff team may be office manager, maybe worship leader, maybe children's ministry, maybe youth leader, maybe buildings facility. Find someone that's doing an excellent job and say, go meet with them. Give them a training. Send them to a conference. Empower them. Give them tools so that they see what they're doing as a part of the team and get best practices as well as a part of the team. And then number 10 and lastly, periodically get away to dream, plan, and pray. Periodically get away to dream, plan, and pray together. Seek God and keep your, number one, seek God and keep your heart on fire. Number two, clarify and localize vision. Number three, recruit team members into clarity. Number four, learn the gifting and personalities of each team member. Number five, define essential roles for each person on the team. Number six, operate on the 3-goal, 3-month principle. Number seven, celebrate weekly progress and coach through challenges. Number eight, deal with relational problems transparently and quickly. Number nine, invest in growth opportunities for each team member. And number 10, periodically get away to dream, plan, and pray. I'm telling you this now because I believe some of you need to form teams that are ready to go in the fall. So if you look at the fall and you say, I have all summer, you look at your current team and say, you know, my current team is really not a team. People don't show up. People don't have commitment. It's really not a functioning team. Then I'm posing this to you. What if now we're in June, July, August, you have about 3 months to revamp your team for the fall? What kind of team would you like functioning in the fall? I would not suggest that you try to get it done in the summer. I think the fall is a better time to go. But by the fall, if you were, you know, Garrett, they're all going to be volunteers. And you're church planting. So, you know, you're going to be scrounging to try to pull people together. But you could still have a great team. It may be small, but by the fall, what kind of team do you want to have? You're launching something. You got to cast the vision. You have to say, this is the kind of people. Recruit from the inside and the outside, but you need a functioning team. Yes.
In that, with Garrett and all of us that have the people that we have, not necessarily the people we want, how do you balance the desire to have the right people on the bus, but also you have a small pool of people to work with? How do you balance that where you say, well, that's not really the ideal person, but who else can I ask?
You know, yeah, I think everybody struggles through that, right? You think, wow, I would like number 10, and I got a number 2 in this place right now, and they can't do a great job. So I would say a couple things. I would say get the best that you have. Get the best that you have. You may not always have people that can do a great job. Get the best that you have, and then try to up the level. Maybe they're not the best because they haven't been trained. Maybe they're not the best because they haven't been exposed. Maybe they're not the best because they don't have the capacity. But I think you should invest in what you have. God never holds us responsible for what we don't have. He holds us responsible for what we do have and what we do with what we have. So sometimes you need to start with what you have and start praying that God will bring in what you don't have. And keep your eyes open for what you don't have and say, God, bring them about. But what I do have, I'm going to clarify. There's going to be a clear job description, expectation. We're going to raise the bar, and we're going to start praying and believing and looking for that kind of person for this role. Yeah, good question. Any other questions about this?
I would say to Dave, if your vision isn't there, you're not going to get that kind of leader you need. And it may take you longer than you want, but if you got to stay dissatisfied. You know, you can't say, oh, well, this is what we got. And 5 years go by, and you got the same level 2 leader there. Get who you got, but stay dissatisfied.
Yeah.
And find out, how do I recruit the level 10? Maybe they're not on our team yet. But if your vision's big enough, the leaders are attracted to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Eric?
Could you talk to us about on-ramps and off-ramps, specifically when maybe you bring somebody onto the team that you recognize shortly that was a bad move?
Yeah.
How do you navigate through that? And maybe also when you have a small pool of people, you have a timeline in place, like, okay, this person can serve in this role for 9 months, but that gives me, puts the fire in me to look for the successor for that position.
Yes. That's a challenge for all of us. You get someone into place and you quickly realize they don't have the capacity, the time, the ability, or they're really bad with people, they're good with technology, and you realize this is a bad fit. And so here's a couple of things that I would do. Number one, whatever they're not really good at, I would be open and honest and talk to them about it. Hey, you're really good at this, but you're really bad with people. I've sent some people here on our team to courses on customer relationships because I felt like they weren't aware how they offended people. And I would sit down and say, you know what, you're offensive to people and you don't even realize it. So I want you to take a course on how to treat people. Really? I thought I was really good. I've always been super good at it. No, you're not. And so, but you don't even know that you're not good with people. So I'm going to take you to a training class on how to do that. If you find someone that's not good for that role and they're already in that role, here's what I would do. I would not just say, you stink at this role, let me step you out. I would say, now that I know your gifting and your wiring, I think that you would do really good at this role. So I think that you're better at this than you are at this. So I learned that from Oscar Midaoyu in Nairobi Chapel. He would do an internship. They do an internship and they hire some people on staff. And I said, what about the people that don't make it on staff? He said, I never say you didn't make it. I always say, hey, let me channel your energy and direction to this next place because I think that's a better fit than this. And so everybody has value. Everybody has gifting. Everybody is great at something, But not everybody is great at everything. So it's better to sort of move them in the direction of what they're really good at. I have some people that I thought could be managers. But when I put them over people, they would always end up not building a team spirit. So I realized they can't manage people. They have to manage things. And so I had to move them out of management of people and move them into management of things and realize they'll always be limited to manage things, but they can't manage people very well. So don't just let them go. Make sure you bridge them to the next thing that they're going to do. Okay, hey, we could talk a lot about this because there's so much, but here's what I want to say. If you're dissatisfied with your current team, organizational team, you can complain about it or you can say, it's my responsibility to build a team, the kind of team that I would want to be a part of. And it may take me a while to do that, but I need to start now building the team that I believe will take this to the next level of where we want to go. We are all team builders to one degree or another. To think that you as a solo pastor can just connect with everybody and meet with everybody and do it all yourself, you are shooting yourself in the foot, if not in the head. So some of you have operated that way for a while and it's not working. You cannot be the go-to person for everybody. You need to build a team. A team that owns their responsibilities, a team that does it better than you do it. You can't be the guy that manages everything. And so that's the challenge. By the fall, start building a team now. Have those conversations now. Besides your elder team, I'm not talking about an elder team here, and there may be some crossover, but I'm talking primarily about an organizational team that you help move things forward at your location.